Chapter 87. On moral grounds to strike at Bonaparte, if we at any crisis, reckon it expedient so to do. The government will act throughout in concert with the Allies, and ministers are well within their rights to claim that their responsibility be not disturbed by hackneyed forms of speech. Upon war's horrors, and the bliss of peace, which none denies. Cheers. Ponsonby, I ask the noble lord, if that is meaning and pronouncement be immediate war? Castlery, I have not phrased it so. Opposition cries, the question is unanswered.
There are excited calls, and the house divides. The result is announced as 37 for Whitbread's amendment, and against the 220. The clock strikes 12 as the house adjourns.
Seen by Wessex. Durnover Green, Casterbridge, on a patch of green grass on Durnover Hill, in the purlieus of Casterbridge, a rough gallows has been erected, and an effigy of Napoleon hung upon it. Under the effigy are faggots of brushwood. It is the dusk of a spring evening, and a great crowd has gathered, comprising male and female inhabitants of the Durnover suburb, and villagers from distances of many miles. Also are present some of the county yeomanry in white leather breeches and scarlet, volunteers in scarlet with green facings, and the Reverend Mr. Palmer, vicar of the parish, leaning against the post of his garden door, and smoking a clay pipe of preternatural length. Also Private Cantle from Egdon Heath, and Solomon Longways of Casterbridge. The Durnover Band, which includes a clarionet, serpent, oboe, tambourine, cymbals, and drum, is playing Ord Wellington's hornpipe. Rustic, wiping his face, says I, please God I lose a quarter to ze burned. And I left Stourcastle at 3 o'clock to a minute. And if I'd known that I should be too late to ze the beginning on't, I'd have lost a half, to be a bit sooner. Yeoman, oh, you be soon enough good now. He's just going to be lighted. Rustic, but shall I zee and die? I wanted to zee, if he die hard. Yeoman, why, you don't suppose that Tony himself is to be burned here? Rustic, what not Tony that's to be burned? A woman, why, bless the poor man, no. This is only a mommet they've made of him, that's got neither chine nor chitlings. His innards be only a lock of straw from bridle's barton. Longways, he's made, neighbor, of a old cast jacket and breeches from our barracks here. Likeways Grammar Pale gave us Cap'n Meg's old Sunday shirt that she'd saved for tinderbox linnet, and Keeper Trixie of Melstock emptied his powder horn into a barm bladder to make his heart why. Rustic vehemently, then there's no honesty left in Wessex folk nowadays at all. Oni's going to be burned on Durnover Green tonight, that was what I thought, to be sure I did, that he'd been catched sailing from his island, and landed at Budmouth and brought to Casterbridge Jail, the natural retreat of malefactors. False deceivers making me lose a quarter who can ill afford it, and all for nothing. Longways, tis de muscle oh good for thee to cry out against Wessex folk, when 'twas all thy own stunful ignorance. The vicar of Durnover removes his pipe and spits perpendicularly. Vicar, my dear misguided man, you don't imagine that we should be so inhuman in this Christian country as to burn a fellow creature alive? Rustic, faith, I won't say I didn't. Durnover folk have never had the highest of Christian character come to that. And I didn't know, but that even a passon might backslide to such things in these gory times I won't say on a Sunday, but on a week night like this, when we think what a blasphemous rascal he is, and that there's not a more charnel-minded villain towards women folk in the whole world.
The effigy has by this time been kindled, and they watch it burn, the flames making the faces of the crowd brass bright, and lighting the grey tower of Durnover Church hard by.
Woman singing, bayonets and firelocks. I wouldn't my mammy should note, but I've been kissed in a sentry box, wrapped up in a soldier's coat. Private Cantle, talk of backsliding to burn bony, I can backslide to anything, when my blood is up, or rise to anything, thank God for it.
Why, I shouldn't mind fighting Boney single-handed, if so be I had the choice o' weapons, and fresh rain barrow flints in my flint box, and could get at 'em downhill. Yes, I may dangerous hand with a pistol now and then. Hark, what's that?
A horn is heard eastward on the London road.
Ah, here comes the mail. Now we may learn something. Nothing boldens my nerves like news of slaughter.
Enter mail coach and steaming horses. It halts for a minute, while the wheel is skidded, and the horses stale.
Several, what was the latest news from abroad? Guard, when you left Piccadilly White Horse Cellar. Guard, you have heard, I suppose, that he's given up to public vengeance, by government orders? Anybody may take his life in any way, fair or foul, and no questions asked. But Marshal Ney, who was sent to fight him, flung his arms round his neck, and joined him with all his men. Next, the telegraph from Plymouth sends news landed there by the Sparrow that he has reached Paris, and King Louis has fled. But the air got hazy before the telegraph had finished, and the name of the place he had fled to couldn't be made out.
The vicar of Durnover blows a cloud of smoke, and again spits perpendicularly.
Vicar, well, I'm dear me. The Lord's will be done. Guard, and there are to be four armies sent against him: English, Prussian, Austrian, and Rusian. The first two under Wellington and Blücher. And just as we left London, a show was opened of Boney on horseback as large as life, hung up with his head downwards. Admission 1 shilling, children half price. A truly patriot spectacle. Not that yours here is bad for a simple country place.
The coach drives on down the hill, and the crowd reflectively watches the burning.
Woman singing, I, my love's gone a-fighting where war trumpets call, the wrongs o' men riding why carbon and ball, and saber for smiting, and charger, and all, to, of whom does he think there where war trumpets call? To whom does he drink there, why carbon and ball on battle's red brink there, and charger, and all? 3. Her, whose voice he hears humming where war trumpets call, wait, love, thy coming why carbon and ball, and bandsmen a drumming thee, charger and all.
The flames reach the powder in the effigy, which is blown to rags. The band marches off playing 10 war's alarms, the crowd disperses, the vicar stands musing and smoking at his garden door till the fire goes out and darkness curtains the scene.
Act 6. Scene I, the Belgian frontier,
the village of Beaumont stands in the center foreground of a bird's eye prospect across the Belgian frontier from the French side, being close to the Sambre further back in the scene, which pursues a crinkled course between high banks from Maubeuge on the left to Charleroi on the right. In the shadows, that muffle all objects, innumerable bodies of infantry and cavalry are discerned bivouacking in, and around the village. This mass of men forms the central column of Napoleon's army. The right column is seen at a distance on that hand, also near the frontier, on the road leading towards Charleroi, and the left column by Salers-sur-Sambre, where the frontier and the river nearly coincide, the obscurity thins, and the June dawn appears.
Dumb show, the bivouacs of the central column become broken up, and a movement ensues rightwards on Charleroi. The 12 regiments of cavalry which are in advance move off first. In half an hour more bodies move, and more in the next half hour, till by 8 o'clock the whole central army is gliding on. It defiles in strands by narrow tracks through the forest. Riding impatiently on the outskirts of the columns is Marshal Ney, who has as yet received no command. As the day develops, sight and sounds to the left and right reveal that the two outside columns have also started, and are creeping towards the frontier abreast with the center. That the whole forms one great movement, coordinated by one mind, now becomes apparent. Preceded by scouts, the three columns converge. The advance through dense woods by narrow paths takes time. The head of the middles and main column forces back some outposts, and reaches Charleroi, driving out the Prussian general Zieten. It seizes the bridge over the Sambre, and blows up the gates of the town.
The point of observation now descends close to the scene. In the midst, comes the Emperor with the sappers of the guard, the marines, and the young guard. The clatter brings the scared inhabitants to their doors and windows. Cheers arise from some of them as Napoleon passes up the steep street. Just beyond the town, in front of the Bellevue Inn, he dismounts. A chair is brought out, in which he sits, and surveys the whole valley of the Sambre. The troops march past cheering him, and drums roll and bugles blow. Soon the Emperor is found to be asleep. When the rattle of their passing ceases, the silence wakes him. His listless eye falls upon a half-defaced poster on a wall opposite the Declaration of the Allies. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.